Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 15th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long. Happy anniversary, buddy.
Wow, man. 7 years.
Yeah, I think the seventh anniversary is the J-Design playing card anniversary, isn't it?
Could be.
I got a couple decks here. I'll give you two. I'm sure you got me something, too. So.
And, you know, when I posted this on the forum, I posted it as the seven-year itch.
I'm definitely itching to the show. I promise you that.
Well, we certainly will scratch it a little later on. A lot of people participated,
nice.
So...
nice! Set that up. You spiked it like VB Dave. Oh, awesome.
I'm looking forward to it, though. I'm looking forward to what everyone had to say, what their favorite moments or people on the show were, and then you and I will have our top five. So, pretty cool. Very exciting stuff. I think there'll be some overlap. That's always a good
364
thing.
364 shows and only about five of them have been good.
So. Got to reinforce the good stuff when you can. So, speaking of good stuff,
excellent. You took my segue there. And by segue, I mean just the phrasing, not the actual really cool way to get around my neighborhood.
Not the cool writing thing.
No. But yeah, we had this great free roll on Face Up Gaming. On Saturday, I got to play it, and it was doing quite well for a while, and then, as usual, self-destructed.
As usual.
But I got to say, you know, we're going to be thanking the Ante Up Nation several times during the show, I'm sure.
It's a love fest.
It is. But it was great to see, you know, when I sat down, so many familiar names, at the tables around when I moved around, and then when the folks at FaceUp sent me the actual results at the end, seeing Ante Up, all over the place, we really turned out in force for this thing and crushed this thing. That I crushed it, including winning it. Bernice Q, our longtime listener, great friend, took it down. And funny story here, she was at my table for a while, and we were talking back and forth, right? And then, of course, I flamed out. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's go shopping. So I went shopping, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there in rack room shoes, right? and don't judge, you know, it's buy one, get one half off. So even though the shoes only last 2 months, you know, what are you going to do, right? And so I'm trying on new sandals, and I get a text from her. And she's like, hey, if I win this cruise package, can I sell it? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. She's like, good, I'm heads up.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, if you lose, you win an iPad. And she's like, I know. And of course, she has a bad beat, actually wins it, because she's seasick, you know, doesn't want to go on a cruise. She ended up selling it pretty quickly, though, so congrats to her. But I'm sure she probably would have preferred an iPad.
Take that money and buy an iPad, so.
Yeah, probably, absolutely. And then, but here's the thing, three other Ante Uppers made the final table,
awesome.
Including Tsunami, who... if you haven't checked out the forum, like, you gotta check out the bad beat there. I hate to pile on the poor guy, but kind of misunderstood how we're doing this thing. You know, the way it was set up is there were three iPads to give away. You know, if whichever team won, had a player who won, like we did, didn't get an iPad. But the other three teams, the highest finisher from that team got an iPad, right?
Man.
He misunderstood that and thought he had an iPad coming to him and promised it to his wife.
Oh.
What was hilarious about this is Bernice wins a cruise package that she can't
doesn't want.
Has to sell it. And Tsunami doesn't win an iPad they think he is, and now committed to buying one.
Hey, we're doing our part for the economy is what we're doing.
Absolutely. What an amazing free roll.
Wow, incredible.
But yeah, three other people made the final table. We had five more in the top 25, if we don't count Hef Mike. longtime Annie Upper who played for Team Isle Can't Hang. Boo! It was a good turnout. Hopefully they'll be doing another one. We'll be talking to them soon, and hopefully they'll give us a little bit more advance warning so we can get the word out so some more folks can play.
You know, we worked with Hef Mike.
Yeah.
That's just a slap in the face, man.
Yeah.
Slap in the face. Well, speaking of getting support, we have a very exciting thing. If you follow us on Twitter and Facebook, you probably already know about this, but we've applied for a small business grant, which, I think that's a great idea. You told me about it. You're like, hey, there's this grant that we kind of qualify for. I think we should go for it. I'm like, sure, why not? But the key is we need 250 votes by June 30th. That's 15 days.
15 days.
Yeah, so to be considered, we need...
10 votes a day.
We need 10 votes a day, essentially.
Hey, I'm a feel voter. I'm not a math voter.
I think we're at the time of this taping, we have about 50 votes right now. So we need 200 more votes, and it's easy and it's free, and there's no trick or anything. You just go to the website and vote. You don't have to give them your email. You know, nothing like that. You just do it, right? You just vote. So I'm gonna put the address on the forum, but in case you don't visit the forum. It's missionsmallbusiness.com. Just go there and vote for Anti Up Publishing of Florida. I think if you just type in Anti Up or Publishing, or Anti Up Publishing, it'll come up. You don't have to put the state in. But if you want
your
to.
Your mom had a little trouble with it.
Yeah, I don't know. My mom told me the same thing. I don't know. So you put Florida in and you put in Clearwater, I guess it'll come up even easier. But it should just come up. And then just vote for us. We really want to get those 250 votes in time to be considered for this grant. You know, we don't harbor any illusions that we're going to get it, but you never know. You never know. We qualify, and we could use the cash.
I work really hard on our application.
people always want to know. They always want to know how to help us out. You know.
Yeah, no, that was the point I was going to make. And, you know, I'm not kind of pulling on the heartstrings here, but we're going to get a lot of love back to the listeners the rest of the show. And you know, one of the things that we hear all the time from folks is, you know what? Hey, I'm not going to buy an ad from you. I'm not going to pay for the magazine. I'm probably never going to go on a poker cruise because I'm seasick, even if I win one.
That's very specific.
But, you know, I want to help you guys out, so let me know what I can do. I'm letting you know right now, this is what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, it takes 3 seconds, you vote for us, and your vote might help us get $250,000 to, as I said on Facebook, continue our very important work of making rich poker players' egos bigger.
All right, so once again, it's missionsmallbusiness.com. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Now, I've been holding on to this next item for quite a while, Chris, because it came up right before the last show before I went on that road trip. And but I'm back now. And so I want to talk about this because I found this absolutely fascinating. It was an MSNBC story on their website. And maybe you can put the link on the show notes on the forum if you want. People can read it. But essentially what it was a story talking about, is it possible to partner with an online company that is clean?
Hmm.
And the backdrop of this, obviously, is, you know, we're watching as we're getting close to getting online poker back in an interstate form, at least right now, particularly in Nevada, which is really close, but some other states, which we'll talk about later in the show. What's going on here is a lot of these land-based companies are saying, you know what, it's a lot easier if we just partner with a company that already does online gaming or online poker, that already has the software, knows all this stuff, than for us to start from scratch, right?
Yeah.
So you have all these weird marriages coming up, and, you know, as these land-based casino companies look for online poker dance partners, they're finding that it's almost impossible to find online poker companies that don't have some quote-unquote history, you know, whether that means that they had to settle with our government on charges of online or poker or fraud or whatever, or their owners have been involved in other unsavory activities. And so that's one issue. But the other issue is that a lot of these states, you know, to get a gaming license, it's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're an owner or just a dealer. And a lot of it is that they want to be sure that they're, go back to the days of casino. You know, they don't want mobsters running this anymore. So they prevent individuals or companies that have some of these transgressions from even getting licensed. So the end of this is that you know, if these people partner up and they can't get them licensed, what happens? And so now there's a debate going on. Well, maybe because of the tax revenue involved and everything that the regulators are going to have, are going to kind of be forced to look the other way to make this these kind of marriages of convenience work. So what do you think?
What I want to ask you is, do you feel what the level of dirtiness is? Like, in other words,
right?
The casinos, the online rooms that are running still right now, are they dirty in the U.S.'s mind? Because we say that the UIGEA means that any business that they're transacting with banks is illegal, so how are they getting the money? So, right. So is everyone that's running still that isn't the big three that got pulled down, are they...
I don't know about all of them. The story didn't get into, a list of their... certainly there are ones out there that probably are clean enough to get through right now.
Right.
They may not be the biggest ones or the ones that the U.S. companies want to work with, but yeah, that's a good point. And again, it's the level of the transgressions, and it's also the time. I mean, just because some guy stole a car when he was 16 doesn't make him a bad guy when he's 40. We can... reform and learn from our mistakes and come back stronger. So I got to think that that's going to play into these decisions. If they even get to the decisions, maybe at some point they just say, what's done is done and move forward. But there is a difference probably between business operations of flouting a law that may or may not be completely still on the books now versus some of these owners dealing in pornography or personal transgressions as well too, and those you can eliminate by changing ownership, I guess, if it comes down to it.
Well, I guess it's going to be tough just because of the minutia that the government always puts you through,
right,
for something like this. So literally, they could look at any online room that has ever even had an online room and offered it to even one person in the United States and say, nope, that's dirty or whatever. So if that's the case, then no, you're not going to be able to with any company that's online that has done anything here. Now, I don't know if there exists one. There are a lot of rooms that are abroad that we've never been able to play on here.
Right.
Those could be the ones that could be fine because they're regulated in Europe or wherever they are. So
yeah, as long as their owners don't have problems on their own.
Yeah, exactly. So it's possible. I don't know. I guess just it matters how strict they're going to be and what they consider unsavory or right. not. But I think it's possible. I think it is possible. It's going to be difficult though. I don't know. I think that they're going to loosen up. The government always. I was going to make a reference to something else, but I won't do that. But it was religious. But but the government, seems to loosen up when money seems to be lining their pockets. So something tells me when it comes right down to it that these transgressions will be, ignored if enough money can come their way and fill their coffers or however you want to put it. So is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? No.
Well, as online poker players, we've been accustomed to getting to the summit and being kicked back off the mountain.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm wondering about here. I mean, a lot of us are just kind of like finally making peace with the fact that it's probably going to be an interstate poker model here for a while. And we need to get one going before the dominoes tumble. And if... And Nevada, which is a very strict gaming commission, decides ultimately, hey, these aren't going to work. That's one more kick down the mountain, I think, for us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? We got a hotline, and people have been using it lately, which I really appreciate.
Absolutely.
And I even got a couple to use it for the main topic today. Our phone number is 813-448-1120. The reason why I like the hotline and the reason why I love our show is that I'm always reminded every once in a while that we're not just in the United States, we're not just in Florida, but we are worldwide. And this caller, something tells me he's not from, like, New York.
How you doing, Scott? How you doing, Chris? It's Simon calling you. Just want to say I love the podcast, the PokerCast, sorry. Just heading down to Vegas in June, wondering if you can recommend any low-limit stud or horse games. looking to play something there. And also, are you doing an anti-up meetup in June or what? Thanks, guys. Keep it up. Cheers.
From New York. That's funny. I like that. I always like when we hear from Simon. I think you've heard from him before, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. It's interesting because I want to know first what he means by low limit stud. Does he mean like 4.8? If 4.8 is a limit to him, you'll find it at the Venetian or something, or part of at least a mix. I don't know. If that's what he means by low limit, then I think you'll find it. It's funny. During the World Series, you can find anything.
That's true. You get a lot more variety during the series. I think in general, you're right. But even during the series, I think for the low limit, it's almost always going to have to be as part of some kind of a mixed game.
Yeah.
A horse kind of thing. You know, you'll get a mixed game of Venetian. I would definitely tell him to stop there. The one I'm excited about, and I haven't figured out how excited you are yet, but I have, since the last time we were out there, wanted to play this big hoggy game.
Oh, yeah.
Suncoast, which I believe was like, what, a 2-10 spread or something?
Yeah, I think it was 2-10 at the Suncoast, right?
Suncoast, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's on Monday nights, I think, out there. And if we work that in the schedule, that's where I'm going to be. So I don't know if he considers that low limit.
So. I guess so. I mean, the biggest bet you have to make is 10. So, but normally it's, I don't know if they do that. I don't know if they pump the pot with 10 every time they bet or not, but it's a spread limit. Yeah. So.
But it's not a 20-40.
Right, exactly. So I probably would think that it was a low limit. I forgot all about the hoggy, to be honest with you, so.
Yeah. And there are, you might find them, too, in some of the off-strip casinos, too. Of course, that's a little tougher when you're a tourist, unless you have a card.
Yeah.
And some of course, is off the strip, but... hey, come to the meetup, which you mentioned. We haven't announced it on the show ever, right?
I know. When I heard that at the end of the clip, I was like, yes.
But that will be Wednesday, June 27th. We're saying 6 p.m., but I'm thinking that might be a little too early. I need to fill my belly beforehand. But it'll definitely be that night at the MGM, and I was pimping it last night on a couple radio shows I was doing, and there's a High Heels Poker Tour team event at the MGM that night, too, so
Oh, wow. The
place is going to be rocking, so hopefully we get a table, but definitely come out and see us then, and if we can find a way to play stud in this thing, we will.
Yeah, yep.
All right, Simon, well, we appreciate you calling in. We are going to extend to you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. Don't want to be a winner. Enjoy this great app. Download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Continuing in the Vegas theme, Doug Walters, longtime podcast listener, he says, which we know. We've heard from him before. And he says, I know you've covered this before. I'm leaving the damp Pacific Northwest. And for a short Vegas vacation, July 1st to the 4th, just missing us. He'd like to play low-stakes casino games. Crappy no-limit hold'em seems to be his game. But my experience is limited to home games and a handful of low-key charity tournaments. I think that I play pretty good ABC poker, but I'm a little intimidated about the nuances of the casino table rules and etiquette, including tipping the dealers. Can you give me any advice? He says, P.S., in honor of your oversized airport toothpaste, apparently is aimed at me, I'm going to attempt to bring a Costco-sized tube of Preparation H through security to see if, A, they will confiscate it, and, B, if they will allow me to squeeze half of it out so it complies with TSA regulations. Just in case, do you know if I can get a subscription to your magazine in prison?
Well, I'll take the last question. Yes, you can. This is the absolutely honest truth. We have at least 5 subscriptions right now that are going to federal penitentiaries.
Man.
So it is possible to get the subscription mailed there. So, do what you gotta do to get that Preparation H to Vegas.
Tipping the dealers, that's your discretion. If you don't know how much or what you're comfortable doing, watch what the rest of the table's doing and think if that's fair, then do it. That's what I always say. But I generally tip a buck a pot, depending on the size of the pot. If the pot's massive, I'll give them more. If it's a worm burner or whatever they call it. If it's a ground skinner and it goes all the way around and I'm in the big blind, the small blind folds to me and I get the money, I'm not giving them the buck. I'm just moving on because I put it in 2 to win 1. So, but other than that, yeah, I mean, I generally tip about a buck a pot. Scott, when we're on the cruises, we tip a little more because it's our crew and stuff like that. But if we're just going to the
poker room, I generally tip $2 a pop, but that's just me.
Yeah, I don't tip $2 a pot.
I like the advertising that Andy Ebb is generous, where he likes to buy stuff for your wife instead. But no, it is a personal decision. But, you know, that not only that, but all the rest of the stuff that you're worried about can be pretty much taken care of by just sitting there and watching a couple orbits of the game before you put your name on the list and sit down. And just watching. I mean, a lot of rooms, I mean, sometimes people get freaky about it, as Chris will tell you on cruise ships. But for the most part, you can sit there and just watch the game, and don't pay attention to whether people are winning pots or losing pots or what cards they have, but the mechanics of it, you know, how the blinds move around, when you have to post them, how much they are, how much people are tipping, you know, another etiquette like that. You know, if you give it a couple orbits, at least you got a head start where you're not learning on the fly.
Here's another thing, too. If you're one of those people who can act really well, when you sit down, talk to the dealer and make it sound like, hey, you know, in my casino, this little white line, you know, that's the betting line, and you could, you know, you could put the chips over if you don't want it. Is that what it's like here? You know, just bring up your questions that way. You know?
So what you're saying is sit down and act like you're drunk. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That was the voice you were given there.
If you're drunk at the table, people will want to try to take your money, and actually you're sober, and you'll be able to reap the benefits. But really, just you can sort of, there's a way you can sort of ask a question so it doesn't sound like you don't know what you're talking about. It just sounds like you have experience somewhere else and you want to know what the deal is there.
Probably a better way of saying that is, you know, hey, are there any special rules in this room that are a little out of the ordinary?
I like my way better.
Yeah. Well, that's why your toothpaste gets confiscated.
Yeah, only after you jinx it. I'd been doing it for years. The one time you say, you're going to get caught, buddy, I got caught. So it's all on you.
Karma's a bitch, baby.
Yeah.
All right, Doug, well, good luck out there. Sorry we'll miss you. You'll get there a little bit after us. Hopefully we'll leave some money in that city for you. But if not, at least we're going to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up Store at annieupstore.com. And, of course, if people come to our meetup, you will get to meet the founder of PMS Pokerware. She'll be there at the MGM and that High Hills Tour event, so come and get to meet Robin and give her your suggestions for new PMS Pokerware shirts instead of me doing all the hard work.
You know what I love most about the Call to Floor that's coming up here is that usually I have experienced something that these people have brought up and right. Or, you know, in the other segments of the show, usually. Sometimes the Call to Floor, but most of the time the other segments. But the Call to Floor seems to me like there's always something that I never thought of.
Right.
And it comes up, and I'm so glad that people want to know what to do, and I feel absolutely terrible for Jerry Spinner here, and it's just an excellent segment. It really is something that, and when it's all over, I'll have something to say about it, because I'm really kind of getting my toast burnt here. Here it goes. It says, I'm at a Las Vegas casino when a couple sits down. The girl has 100 in chips and a $100 bill, which is she puts under her chips. A few hands later, we both end up all in, heads up, and I win with a full house. She slides her chips and her $100 bill to me and leaves, following about a minute later by the man she was with. The dealer asks me for a $100 bill so he can give me chips for it. After giving the bill to the floor and not receiving any chips for about 4 minutes, I call him over, and he tells me that the bill was fake. I can see the man who was with the woman, and the floor manager goes and gets him. The man says he just met the woman tonight and has no idea where she is. The floor is not sure what to do. He calls his boss, then the casino manager, who tells me there is nothing he can do and that it is federal crime and they cannot give me any money. They took down my rewards card number and said they might be able to comp me something in the future when the boss of the poker room returns on Monday, but could not do anything for me at the moment. Is the casino responsible for the bill that the villain has in the game, or is it my responsibility to check it as soon as I receive it?
All right, this is what Jody says. He says, the manager was right not to return the bill. In this situation, as the customer, I would certainly want to inspect the bill myself and have them explain why they feel it isn't real. I don't know the law that well, but I think you would have a hard time making this a liability to the casino. I do feel the casino manager should have gone out of his way to make this right for you. Most rooms in Vegas do allow $100 bills to play. The only real way to avoid this problem is required chips only in games. In my opinion, this is fine for smaller games, but I don't think your situation occurs often enough to cause room managers to feel a need to change their procedures.
I gotta tell you, man, this is the reason why cash shouldn't play. I mean, who's to say that in those stacks of hundreds, if somebody, you know, he's in big games, he's making that as a reason. How do you know those huge bills that hundreds in them that weren't slipped in 10 fake ones, you know what I mean, or something. And I realize it's a long way to go, but that's $1,000 right there. You put 10 fake bills in a stack of 10,000, you know, that's a tenth of the money that you're not having to pay. And to me, if somebody puts a $100 bill on the table, you know what, it should be, why did he pull it from you all of a sudden now and check it? He didn't pull it from her and want to give her chips for it. That's not right. If he doesn't pull it from her right away and then they give it to you and as accepted money, then I think they should pay for it.
All right, but here's the flip side of that. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I kind of feel Jerry got, in a weird way, lucky here that the dealer took it from him, checked, and they found out it was faked in, and they could immediately tell that it wasn't him. They knew the bill came from someone else.
Yeah.
You know, had it not worked out that way, he just kept it, and let's say he cashed out for the night and still had that bill, went to the cage, and they said, hey, this is fake. Then all of a sudden, you're a suspect. You know, now, of course, you got cameras, you could trace it back, so they could probably still do it. But, I mean, you're going to be sitting in an office with a little light on your face for an hour while they review the eye of the sky to figure that out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
well, obviously, you're not going to cash in $100. You already have the bill in your hand, but yeah, I know what you're saying. When he uses it somewhere else, or
even worse, at that point, you're going to take it and go somewhere else, and then they have no eye in the sky.
Yeah, exactly. So he did get lucky. You're right, but I just think that the way that money is accepted on a table like that and not taken right away, but then thrown into his face, and now he loses $100 instead of them or instead of the woman.
I don't really understand
right?
why they felt the need to
take it from him.
Chips in that I mean, I don't. Maybe we missed something in the translation there, but. You know, but this is the same, not this particular example, but I do worry about this every time I'm in a casino and I cash out and I get $100 bills or, you know, you do that a lot at the table, somebody's cashing out and, you know, hey, can I buy the chips from you? And you're, oh, sure, excellent. It takes me from carrying my six racks over there, now I'm only carrying three. And I don't know why that bill they gave me is right. And then am I going to end up having a bogus bill that I had nothing to do with?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's the solution? You go to Office Depot and buy one of those little $20 counterfeit pens and, and you know, mark on them and look up in the light and, you know, embarrass somebody? Because I don't know what I'm looking for.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not a Secret Service agent.
That's crazy. It's crazy. And again, it's just everything goes in the casino's favor here, and it's not... I just don't know how that's fair to him. They accepted it as a nomination.
I mean,
they
here's the thing.
Currency.
I mean, I got to think the casino gets a lot of bogus bills, right?
I don't know.
So they probably take a bath pretty regularly. It just it's unfortunate that it happened with a customer at this point. And I think that was kind of the case the letter writer is making, that they're going to try to find a way to make it right for them. And I'm sure this is a cost of doing business in a casino, and they're not going to give them $100, but. You know, put $100 for the credit on his rewards card, let him get a free hotel night or go to dinner or something, and take the loss on the other side. But because if you start giving people $100, then you're going to get all the low lice coming out doing it. This is one of those situations that just reminds me that people suck. You know, there's just bad people out there in the world.
I know,
and there, you can't prevent it. You can't do everything possible to keep people from being jerks,
it's probably not even her either. It was just someone got it into the system and she had it. It's brutal. I just feel so bad for him. I really think that money shouldn't play on the table. It really shouldn't. If you're going to take it from somebody and cash it in for chips, then you take it from the first person who puts it on the table, not it gets passed around five times and that person's gone an hour later. That's just not right.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's some procedural reasons why it's not. I mean, but, you know, you're not going to find me in a game with a bunch of $100 bills on the table. So I'm not worried about that.
I remember the first time I ever sat down at a cash table in Foxwoods, a guy had like eight of them under his stack, and I just thought, oh, my God, what is that? Because when we play in a home game or when you see it on TV, you don't see money except for at that time I wasn't even watching high-stakes poker. I was just watching regular tournament poker, so... I was like, what the hell is that? Why are those bills there? Why? What's going on? Is this guy just... And I remember thinking, this guy's rich. I remember thinking that, too. And he was just some kid. He was like 23 or something.
Yeah.
But I remember feeling uneasy about it back then. And that was, what, six, 7 years ago, obviously, because the show's 7-year anniversary today. So that was like 7.5 or 6.5 years ago. And I just thinking, there's something wrong about this. And... I don't know. It just feels wrong to me.
It is kind of shocking to walk in a casino and see people playing with bills. I remember the first time, and this was before we started the show. One of my Tunica trip with Faso to the Big World Poker Tour event there, and we walked into the cash game table, and we saw one, and there are no chips on the table at all. It was all $100 bills.
I mean, stacks, oh, man.
Stacks. And you're right, they were all kids, too. I'm like, oh, I hate that. You know? I mean, how many lawns did you mow as a kid?
Yeah.
But it is kind of amazing, and that made me think, too, about Faso. We always kind of have this running joke in the home game, too, and we give each other a dollar bill, and we look it up in the in the sky, and, you know, have a little, you know, because, you know, I don't want to get a bogus dollar bill. So. You know, because you're going to be a counterfeiter, right? You know, what's the most counterfeited bill? It's a 20, is what I've heard. But if that's the case, then, hey, I'm going to do ones. I'm going to fly under the radar. It's a little bit more work, but, you know, I'm not going to get caught, so.
I just see now you win like $600 at the table, and you go to the lady like, "Can I have all ones, please?
Because yeah,
I don't
want
to be counterfeited."
I'm gonna tick off a lot of strippers.
Yeah, say, are you going to this strip joint? Tell.
But you know, no cocktail waitresses, because I'm gonna pass them to you. So, you know. All right, Jerry, we appreciate you sending it in. Of course, we just sent you some swag before, so no swag for you. And but everybody else, send us your call to the floor, the podcast at anyamagazine.com, and you two might win something great.
We have a little housekeeping. Don't forget our survey is still going on. It's going to be going for a little while at anyupmagazine.com/survey. Make sure your voice is heard, and you have a chance to win thousands of dollars of great prizes. The grand prize, which is lunch and a one-hour lesson with world champion Chris Moneymaker.
Absolutely great prize. Looking forward to awarding that. I hope it's somebody that really, truly wants it, too, that wins.
Yeah, yeah.
And enjoys it, because I always say once in a lifetime, that's kind of...
That's pretty close.
A little kind of dramatic, but I mean, it's not something you can just go by.
It's pretty close to that.
Yeah. And then remember our meetups. We already mentioned the Vegas one. That will be June 27th at MGM Grand at night. I think we will have a small gathering somewhere in New Mexico. I'm pinning down the location for that on June 30th. And we'll definitely be at Iowa Blackhawk on Sunday, July 1st. We're going to say meet about 7 o'clock. At the casino, and we'll get a small group together playing cash. You got a couple of us going to a Rockies game beforehand, so there'll at least be three or four of us there. So,
and of course, you heard earlier in the show that there was one way to win a cruise, and there are still some more to win a cruise to come with us. Our schedule is at anyupmagazine.com/cruise, but the August 27th out of Port Canaveral has giveaways at the Suncoast. Is the Suncoast one still going on?
Last drawing is June 15th, so if you're listening to this today...
Yeah, you're going to have to hustle over there.
It's time to get over there.
Ask them about the hockey game, too, for us, if you...
Yeah, absolutely.
The Palm Beach Kennel Club, Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood, Tampa Bay Downs, Ebro Greyhound Park, and, of course, Blue Shark Optics has a way for you to win a cruise, so don't forget those. And then our November 10th cruise is out of Baltimore, and there will be giveaways at Dover Downs, and be sure to check our magazine as well. Because we have a lot of that stuff explained in there, our two latest issues. So, but for now, let's see what's going on in the Antioch News Desk.
North Carolina Governor Bev Perdue has signed a law allowing Harris Cherokee Casino to use live dealers for his table games, including poker. Presently, only electronic poker tables are permitted. But pending the federal government's blessing, the casino is planning to introduce live dealers by the July 4th weekend.
So now this is also has a broader scope as well, right, for the... Because I guess there's more Indian properties.
Yeah, they'll be able to build some new casinos on Indian land that they haven't previously been able to. So obviously, you know, that takes a while.
Right.
But this could end up being a very big thing for North Carolina poker players. I mean, certainly right now, just being able to walk into a poker room and play with live viewers. And it's more than that, I think. You know, we'll talk when I get around to these road trips on the next couple shows that... You know, some people just don't like the electronic tables. But the other thing, too, is it's hard to do a big, huge room with them. So now that they're able to actually use live dealers, it's quite a possibility that they're going to expand the poker offering there. So at least in the meantime, you know, if you go to the casino, you're going to get better games, probably. And then, you know, if they build two or three or four other casinos, then North Carolina could be a hotbed for poker here pretty soon. Which I know people anywhere near there would be really excited, because there's nowhere else to play legally. Anywhere within a very easy drive. So,
and more political news here. A bill to allow online poker in Delaware, championed by the state's governor, has passed the House and is now being considered in the Senate. However, in California, this is breaking news, a state senator who sponsored an online poker bill removed it from his committee's docket this week. It's unknown whether it will be introduced later.
Yeah, two parallel views on this. I mean, yeah. In Delaware, everybody's pushing for this. This is the governor's plan, so you know if it gets to his desk, he's going to sign it right away. It's through the House. It sounds like it's going to make it to the Senate. And then you just have to get the time to get the regulations worked out. And then California, man, what a crap storm that is. You've got Indian tribes fighting with other Indian tribes. You got Indian tribes fighting with casino operators. And then you got the normal anti-gaming folks fighting against everybody else. These bigger states, it's hard to get things done. Just like here in Florida. So, I mean, Delaware, I mean, it's a little easier to move stuff through. But California, wow. That's going to be a fight worth watching.
Absolutely brutal.
All right, and finally, Phil Hellmuth, who always a bridesmaid at the 2011 World Series of Poker, won his record 12th career bracelet and his first in a non-Hold'em event. Rez! And interestingly enough, he bested the same player who finished third in the 1989 main event that started Hellmuth's amazing career when he won that as a little kid that looked just like me. And hopefully I don't grow up to look like him now. And then also Matt Matros, champion of the six-handed no-limit hold'em event, has won a bracelet for 3 years in a row, a feat only accomplished by six players.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I think it was like there's like 53 players who have ever won just three. At least three, I mean. So that's some pretty elite company there. He's on a serious roll, so congrats to all those guys.
We were talking about this on Fifth Street Radio last night, you know, the World Series is prime for all these great stories, just because you get 61 events and, you know, thousands of people in every event. And there's so much stuff that I'm impressed with. I'm always impressed when someone wins two bracelets in 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's just mind-boggling. But to win a bracelet every year for 3 years is really, really, truly amazing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know a lot of those... You know a lot of those, too, that who did do it probably did it at a time when there weren't this many players.
That's true.
Matros is doing it when it's at pretty much the peak of all events being entered. You know, even back when the main event had all those 8,000 people or whatever, the other events had some big numbers, but I think the numbers have grown exponentially to all the events now. So it's that much more impressive, just ridiculous.
Yeah.
What a heater he's on. Hey, we have a fresh O'Malley's Move this week.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. The game's been pretty normal for a 1-2 cash game. There are your aggressors, your more timid players, and everything in between. We've bought in for $400 and have been playing well. We're up to nearly $700 at $690. The under-the-gun limps, he's only been here for about 20 minutes, and we haven't seen him voluntarily put chips into the pot yet. All we can go off is his appearance. He's a middle-aged man wearing a casual button-down shirt, khaki shorts, and a baseball cap with a fishing company on it. It gets folded around to the cutoff, who also limps. The button limps, small blind folds, and we're in the big blind with the 6 of spades, 4 of spades. Not a bad holding to check our option, so we do. The pot is $6 after the rake, and the flop comes ace of spades, queen of spades, 8 of diamonds. We're first to act, and we put $4 into the pot. The under-the-gun calls, as does the cutoff, but the button folds. There's now $16 in the pot, max rake taken out, and the turn is the 6 of hearts. We have a draw, and now bottom pair, so we're going to fire again. We make it $10 to go, and once again, the under-the-gun calls, but the cutoff folds. We're starting to wish we knew a bit more about this opponent, and even more so when the river brings the jack of spades. There's now $36 in the pot, and we just made our baby flush. So we're going to keep up the aggression. We make it $25 to go, and our opponent shoves for $210. There was only $61 in the pot. What's he trying to accomplish with this bet? And more importantly, what are we going to do?
All right, we mentioned at the top of the show that our 7-year anniversary is June 15th, exact published date of this show, right?
Right.
Very cool how that works out. And also, you know, hey, our 4th-year anniversary of the formation of Andia Publishing is coming up June 24th. So, you know, I always look forward to June because, you know, I know I'm going to a lot of baseball games. I know Franklin and Bash is going to come back on TNT. And, you know, I know we got these 2 anniversaries. So it's June is always a very exciting month, I think, for me. And to a lesser degree, you, because you're not a big Franklin and Bash or baseball fan.
Well, it's pretty funny because Franklin and Bash has only been around for 1 year, so this is only the first June you had to look forward to for it. But other than that, yeah, I know, you know, my wedding anniversary is in June, and we always go to the World Series in June.
That's true.
And, yeah. You know, I go to a lot of weddings in June, so I cry a lot. So, you know, it's... It's always a very exciting time for me. But no, really, it's pretty exciting. I think as we mentioned last week, too, I mean, this is probably our show 365, which is so weird when you think about it, how it just 7 years, 365 shows, you could listen to one show every day for a year and never have a repeat. So pretty cool stuff. And I think we should kick it off since we just heard from O'Malley. I think we should probably listen to him and see what he has to say about his favorite moments on the show.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's... wait a second. I just wanted to say congratulations to the Annie Up guys on making it to 7 years of episodes. Almost one episode for every day of the year. That's pretty amazing. I would say my favorite times on the shows are hearing stories about the home game, whenever Joe Navarro comes on, and when Lee Child steps in and helps you guys analyze the hand of the week. Once again, I just want to say congratulations, and... I'll keep listening to the show, and I hope you guys keep pumping them out. I hope to see you on the film.
I think it's going to be tough to top a list like that, right? I think if we actually put out a survey, and we would never do that, right? and ask for the top things, I'm pretty sure home game stories, Joe Navarro is definitely going to be their lead child. Too many people just absolutely... Joe and Lee, anytime we're on the show, I mean, it's a must-listen. And
yeah.
It's not us saying it, that's our fans saying it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the home game stories, I mean, absolutely. I think it's always a reminder that we started as these little punk players.
Yep.
And, you know, 7 years later, we're still these little punk players. But, you know, the biggest compliments I always like are, you know, hey, it sounds like, listening to the show, it sounds like you guys are just hanging out in your home game.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool to me.
And that's what we strive for, too. I mean, we don't ever want it to be something where people just don't understand what's going on or whatever. And not that I don't think we could ever achieve that level, either, because I don't think we could. But if we could, for some reason, discover to how to be that much better of a player and join the elite pros or whatever, I don't think we'd ever turn the show into that anyway. I think it's just, this is what it's about. It's about me and you talking about poker and people relating to it. So,
well, it's interesting, too. I think later on we're going to talk about having pro guests on here, and we've really gotten away from that.
Yeah, we
lately,
have.
So, yeah.
And it's not that we wouldn't do it again. It's just that we've had most of the pros already on the show that people want to hear from, too, on top of it. But we're always coming up with stuff to talk about, you know?
Yep.
And occasionally someone will come on the show that's touting something or whatever, and that's fine. We'll do the whole Jay Leno thing, but... other than that, really, there's always something. This poker is so diverse and so busy and so in the, I guess, ubiquitous that, you know, we just always find something else to talk about. So
yeah, every once in a while you have to take an entire show and be completely narcissistic.
That's right.
So, very important stuff we got to talk about here. all right, so Matty H., all the way from Australia, I believe, wrote in, and he said, from a segment point of view, I've always enjoyed O'Malley's moments. See?
Yep.
We appreciate what you're doing for us, too, O'Malley. And I'm sure one minute mysteries before that. He says, whilst the specials on particular games, Raz, Omaha particularly, that have been done have always been entertaining, if not informative.
Yeah.
I added that. I still have the Power Podcast from a few years ago that were based on a couple different games. 2!
Remember that? I remember we did those, too. We were just like, all right, we got to come up with these imperative rules for playing these games.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
A lot of times we pretty much repeated what we said the week before in another game, but for the most part, though, they were pretty helpful, I thought. I mean, we didn't just come off the top of our head. We did research. We read books and used points from other authors and stuff. So those were pretty good shows, I thought.
Yeah, back when we first started, too, and when I was particularly narcissistic and Googling us and seeing what people were talking about, that was a comment that always came up is, you know, hey, these guys talk a lot about mixed games that no other podcast is. So
yeah,
I've always been proud of that.
Our good friend PokerGeekMN, our Minnesota ambassador, says, I guess I must like torture because I always think fondly back to the first Pot Odds show.
I'm glad somebody looks back fondly on it.
You know, I'm going to say something here that I didn't think I was going to say today, but you know what? I think we did all right on the Pot Odds show.
No, we didn't. No. Sorry.
I think we did all right.
I think we're switching rules. So you've been having a little Bush Light this morning, and I'm drinking a tall glass of milk here. Is that what's going on? The Pot Odds show, I mean, absolutely a splendid disaster. But, you know, what's great about it is we can all laugh about it now.
Yeah.
As we are now.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of the overall show, that was the show, and I don't say we were lackadaisical about the show or phoned it in ever, but that was the show that I think this whole thing switched from just being kind of a fun little hobby we do once a week to, oh my gosh, people actually listen to this and depend on us, and we can't have a disaster like this again. And I felt particularly bad because I really didn't know anything about Pot Odds. And I should have told you that before the show.
Yeah.
I still remember that. I think that was my line as soon as that show got done, because we could tell that we were just crashing and burning. And we finally got done. It felt like, you know, I had been rescued from a tar pit. And I'm like, wow, we really shouldn't have done that. But yeah, from there on out, I think, you know, I pledge, you know, hey, we still screw up from time to time on not doing enough research, but that was the last show that I remember that that I went into it just winging it.
Yeah, it's a winging it thing that never happens anymore, because not just for that, but, you know, you get emails from people. And you don't want those emails, you know what I mean? You just don't want
or worse
them,
so. Tweets now. Tweets are so vicious now.
Yeah. You don't want tweets. So we tend to try to do our homework, or we just don't do it if we know we can't do it. You know what I mean? If we just know we're never gonna figure it out, we just don't do it. So
Ivy Joe, this is great. Two words, chip sanding.
This one got a lot of votes on the
absolutely
forum. Everybody was like plus one on that.
How could it not? This is encapsulates Chris Cosenza in a way that I couldn't explain to people if I tried. You know, if I ever do another interview and someone says, tell me about your partner, Chris, I am going to tell them to download this show. And they'll be like, oh, okay, great, no follow-up questions.
You know what's funny is I don't even really remember the show. I barely remember
it. This was just completely normal. You know, you were excited that you were figuring something out, but for the rest of us, we were just amazed not only that you could do this, but the lengths that you went to make sure that these chips were sanded. It was like a science project times 12. We weren't getting graded on it.
And I still have the contraption, like, in my garage up on, like, a shelf area. So every time I go in the garage and I hit the garage door opening button on the wall, I see it there, and it reminds me of, you know, of different days, not better, but
that's just great. Hey, we might have to include that in the Annie Up auction at some point. We've talked about this before, but, you know, we got some of these mementos from the show over the years, and I've always kind of wanted to put them on eBay and raise some money for charity, and maybe we'll have to add that in, and I might go for a pretty penny.
Man, yeah, it's not the greatest contraption ever made. I mean, it's not like Mythbusters where these guys, you know, they got these drill presses and these carving computer things that can cut these things out for them. This is basically an old mop handle, a roller, paint roller thing, and some blue tape, painter's tape, and a tube of PVC. So, yeah, start the bidding now at like 8 cents. We'll see where it goes from there.
We're going to have to put some kind of sign of release for the winner of that, too. So, you know, they don't go home and try to sand a chip and they knock their eye out or something and sue us for, you know, all $7 that Annie Publishing has.
I wonder if I still have that photo on my phone, too, because I took pictures of it. I can't remember if I still have that photo. But, yeah, that was a long weekend, I have to say. I'm glad a lot of people appreciated it. Okay, Dr. Dark K says, I actually always get excited on the run-up to the end of the year Conkeys. How sad am I? Those are fun.
Not sad at all. You got the spelling correctly, and you even questioned whether you did.
I don't think he did spell it correctly.
Actually, no, he didn't.
Missing
Sorry.
A G. But other than that,
yeah, you're pretty sad, Dr. Dark.
There's a conky for Scott right there. I don't even know how to spell it.
You know, and what's interesting too is we occasionally forget to do this too, don't we?
Yeah, we don't always do the conkies. Although we did the turkeys last year or whatever, right? So that kind of made up for it.
Yeah,
November and. But yeah, we don't always do the conkies anymore. We should remember to do them.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a good reminder that weather actually like that stuff. All right, Keely 19341. He says, whenever I listen to an episode with Faso, the story of the card that somehow left Faso's hand and somehow careened off the dealer's forehead always comes to mind and still makes me chuckle.
You know, and just the fact that we have Faso on the show, I think that's always one of the better shows. You know, you can lump him in with the Lee Childs and the Joe Navarro shows, not so much for the what you're going to learn, but the entertainment value.
Absolutely.
You know,
he
he's always
that game.
Yep, he always does. And is there something? There's an air about him. You know, just that there's this calmness, and which is why that story is so funny, because when he's on the show, he's just this calm, funny guy. But you get him mad in poker, and it's just all of a sudden he turns into Lance, his alter ego. So, all the more reason to have him on the show and talk about some of the stuff that goes on with him in our home game. It's just classic stuff.
Also classic, BB Dave, a segment of Chris's tipping etiquette is never bad.
Yeah, you know, one time, we've never had a problem since, and I was only, you know, this goes back to earlier when we had somebody on the, earlier saying, hey, tell me the etiquette of working in the, you know, playing in a poker room or whatever. And I was just like him, you know. I was there not knowing, it was Doug, I guess, right earlier, Doug in the show.
Right, yeah.
I was at Foxwoods. It was like just my second time there, and I had never gotten a water or a drink, because the first time I was there, I was so worried about playing that I didn't even think about drinking or eating or talking. So the second time, now I'm up, and I'm like, okay, I'm a little relaxed. Hey, I could use a water. But before that, the guy next to me is like, yeah, they don't let you tip with chips anymore. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, you can't tip with chips. I was like, oh, okay. So the lady gave me a water, and I was like, I don't have any money. Because I didn't. I had no singles. I had all my money on the table. I brought $200 bills or whatever it was with me, and that was it. Now, for the rest of my life, I'll never live it down. And you rubbing it in every other week, and you even made a New Year's resolution to never bring it up.
That was several years ago, so it expired.
Oh, yeah, all right.
So.
Does it say I resolved to do it just for this year? I don't really recall that being part of the resolutions.
Well, you know, New Year's resolutions barely last a week, so they have to have a statute of limitations on them. And, you know, once you make the next year's, then you can just crap can the ones you made last year, I think. So
fine. All right, well, our last one's a doozy, and before we get into our own favorite things, comes from MCMC, and I think all these are his, right? All these things.
So I mean, it's a great collection. I think it kind of encapsulates what
everyone was saying.
I think so. That's why we're gonna let him run here a little bit.
He said his favorite episodes are every road trip recap, though Scott and Faso's from LA is tops. What do you think about that?
Well, the first thing I thought about on that was you know, a lot of stuff, but was the Eric Seidel interview that I suffered through. And, you know...
Actually, it was Seidel who suffered through it, not you.
Very true, but, you know, this is, you know, because we were putting together our own top five, and that's really tough to do. And one of them I immediately, you know, wrote down Eric Seidel, so since he brought it up, it didn't make my cut, but... you know, aside from it just being a brutal interview, I mean, that's a good reminder of why it's good to have a partner in these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not me. I can do a really good interview, but I like to prep for it and have it know it's coming up and really prepare for it. And you're much better at these off the cuffs. You know, we're walking in tournaments, you're like, hey, there's Zojo. I'm going to go over and talk to him.
Yeah.
And you come back with a great interview. I can't do that, as we've proven. With Eric Seidel. So that was a good reminder there that, you know, hey, next time I travel, that's not probably the kind of content I want to bring back to the Indian Nation.
And wasn't there another moment in that trip, too, where, like, Evelyn Ng was walking by and Faz was like, Scott, that's Evelyn Ng. You got to go interview her. And you're like,
yes, yes.
No, no. I'm like, you just passed up a chance to interview Evelyn Ng. Really?
Yeah. It was a...
That's the same trip, right?
Yeah. Not my finest. Because, you know, I passed up talking to her, but I talked to Davis Glansky.
Yeah.
Who grilled me about who I was and looked at my name badge the entire time to make sure
that's
I
right.
wasn't...
And who are you again? What is this for?
All right, so MZMZ moves on to some of his favorite moments. Chris throwing his weight around on a non-Annie Up cruise when a woman thinks he's looking at her husband's cards. Do you know who I am?
Well, I didn't say it like that. You would laugh if you knew who I was or something like that. I didn't say, do you know who I am? But, yeah.
That's how it sounded, buddy.
Oh, man, that was hilarious.
You know, on the ship here, you got the captain, and above the captain is me, Chris Kassens.
That's right. This is my ship.
I'm going to stay wherever I want.
I own this ship.
Continuing with... See, I mean, here's the thing. It's without a doubt people love me much more than you on the show.
Oh, yeah.
It's not
Absolutely.
Even a question, right?
Absolutely.
But they love the little stuff that you do because it's just so entertaining. And he goes on to say every Rush reference. You know, you're the only person in America that only knows one band.
Hey, that's not true. I knew Victor, which was one of the spinoff bands by one of the members of the band. So I know that band, too. No, really, I do love Rush. I even made a reference to Rush this week on the forum because I know Rant's a Rush fan, and I want to know if he's going to see him this month. Hey, you know, everyone listens to the show because they want to know about us, and this is who we are, and Rush is who I... You know, I mean, I'm proud to say I'm a fan of Rush, but I don't know how you can say you're proud to say you're a fan of Bon Jovi, yet you do.
Yes, so I'm completely proud of that.
I don't know how you can do that, but... Okay, he mentions the early days of Erwin Blanc calling in and you all showing your mastery of foreign cultures.
Denmark, Belgium,
Scotland.
What country is he from? They're all the same over there.
He sounds like Sean Connery, so maybe he's from Scotland. I don't know.
Oh, I know we love Erwin, and you know the fans really make the show. And the next thing on it was the Maudlin 100th anniversary show, or maybe Last Time of the Times, whichever had all the Collins.
Yeah, that was the 100th anniversary show. That was pretty incredible. And a lot of these too, a lot of my moments kind of overlap with these, and we'll talk about that later. He also brings up Conculate and other neologisms, so I think that's all on Scott. I don't think I've ever actually made up any words on the show.
You made up one 2 weeks ago when I wasn't on. I forget what it is already, but I'm like, yes.
Yes, but that's because I was filling your shoes. I did it intentionally.
Absolutely.
Everything I was doing was to be like you, so.
Yes, but Conculate and Deutsche Bankery have worked their way into the lexicon. And
oh, juice.
Great pride in it. Yes, the juice. Absolutely. The next thing is that every time you read a comment about, quote, less banter, more poker on there, thank you for not changing. Well, thank you for thanking us for not changing. I always hate that.
It's more than poker. And it's funny because when even every week I kind of cringe a little bit. Like this week I thought, if somebody's listening to us for the first time this week, they're never listening to us again.
Of course not.
You know, talking about all the insider stuff and a business grant for ourselves. And, you know, we didn't even get to poker until, God, I don't even know, the fourth segment of the show this week.
That's not true. We talked about the pre-roll.
Yeah, I know. But there's no poker in it. You know, you could talk about baseball the same way you talked about poker. Hey, last night the Yankees won. They beat the Braves and swept the series. But that doesn't... There's no, it makes no difference now that, you know, the Yankees are in first place by a game and a half. Well, okay, well, there's no poker in there, you know. So I think that people would, you have to really, really like the show to appreciate these shows. And then after that, we'll give you another quality show next week. So, although it's going to be Scott rambling about some rooms that he visited, so I don't know if that's going to qualify either. But stick with us. We won't let you down in about a month.
About a month, yeah, absolutely. And then he says, the many times people looked at me in the gym and wondering what's so funny while I'm running and listening to the podcast. You know, we'll talk about this more when we get to our list, but the whole concept of podcast, I think, is still interesting to me to this day, 7 years later. And the fact that it's such a personal thing where people can listen to it where it's most convenient for them,
right,
is one of the coolest things. You know, we had that cab driver from Denmark that used to listen to it. We had people that ride it on the train, working out, mowing the lawn. And you're right. You know, I was listening to the show on the plane, I think I told you, and I was busting the gut there with the people staring at me like, what the heck are you listening to? And it's kind of cool because you have this kind of inside joke. You know, they don't know what you're listening to, but they know they should be listening to it.
What's weird is that there are still people who don't know what a podcast is.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, we weren't around at the advent of podcasts, but we were pretty close.
Yeah.
Within a year or two, maybe. And
the caveman ears.
Yep. Yeah. So it's just funny that people still don't know what it is when you tell them what you do once a week, or they can't quantify it or understand it. It's like it's a radio show, but it's not. And for those who do know, they get it, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And he finishes off by saying, I got my first iPod in September 2005, and I've been listening ever since. I look forward to the show every week. Here's to at least another 7 years.
Yeah, it's funny because that's like right after we started, right? I mean, that's like literally 2 months after we started.
Yep.
So he's been around since the beginning. So always appreciate that, MCMC, and everyone else. Thanks for sending in your stuff. It's always great when you guys contribute to the show. You make the show, really. We don't make the show.
Absolutely.
But do you want to kick it off now at our top fives?
Sure. I'm going to say this was really tough, and I'm sure it was tough for you too. And we haven't shared our list with each other, so that's what's even be more interesting, how we went about it. It's impossible for me to have a top five that doesn't mention our first show, because if we didn't have our first show, we wouldn't have had a second show or 365th show. It's a little math bender there that Gundam can chew on for a while. But, you know, we talked about this a little bit. I'm not going to rehash too much. But, you know, we have absolutely no idea what we were doing. You know, this intern at TPT got to be at the Times jazzed about doing podcasts, and we just sat down and talked. But I don't know if we ever said this. Maybe we did before. But what I thought was funny about that was that so we didn't know what we were doing. We're talking, right? We finished the show. We look over at him, we're like, was that good? And he's like, yeah, it was good. All right, let's do it again. Huh? Well, do it again?
Yeah.
And I think we did like 3 takes. And for the first month or so, we kept doing takes. And I'm like, this is, I don't get this. And a lot of it was because I didn't really understand what it was at the time, but I understood being spontaneous.
Yeah.
A little bit, and not scripting. And now we organize the show now. I don't know whether we script it, but every once in a while I like to write a joke and try to work it in, right? And I remember that first show I worked, I was really proud of. I wrote the, we were talking about how poker was on every network, and I'm like, what's next? We're going to turn on PBS and see Bert and Ernie playing poker? Great joke the first time, but like the 7th take of the show, it lost its luster.
You know, something else too that I recall now when we were doing that was the fact that we had no real way to know what our levels were.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even now we're learning that, like when we did the live stream a little while ago,
right, yeah,
you know, they made us talk like this. And it's hard to, my personality is always loud and I just, when we were doing that show back then, it was kind of like, we had to talk like this because we weren't sure if we were going to get into the red and then it was going to peak. And so it was really tough to show your personality because my personality, even yours, is very demonstrative, you know, moving around and talking loud and stuff. So those shows came off like monotone, you know, jerks.
Well, we had a bunch of people working around us.
Yeah, and that was true, too. We didn't have a studio or anything, so we had to be quiet. And, of course, we had the microwave in the background dinging at the beginning. So. That's definitely a fine moment. What didn't make my top five, I don't have these in any particular order, I have to say. I just, and it's tough because, to be honest, there are so many moments. I could look at the list and say, wow, we did that show? You know what I mean? It's just there's such a massive list of shows now. I forget some of the shows we've done. And so to really come up with an essential top five would be very difficult, no matter how long I took to do it. So I have to say that one of my favorite moments of all time, and again, every time we had somebody in the studio or something like that, I've always loved those moments. When we had Chip and Karina in there at the same time,
yeah,
stuff like that, I just felt like we were getting big time to have this, you know, very popular couple of poker players in our thing and wanting to be on our show and traveling there and everything. So that was kind of cool. But I have to say that Faso's recalling of your behavior at the Canadian border is absolutely in my top five for just making me laugh and just seeing the kind of chemistry all three of us have, and particularly knowing what you are like now, and him trying to keep you in line at the border. It was hilarious, and that encapsulates the whole having Faso on the show. That just to me, it just describes what every show that Faso's on seems to be like that, and that to me was the pinnacle of him just being nervous in the passenger seat and you just being your idiot self with the Border Patrol Mountie or whatever he was. And it was the pinnacle of you guys traveling together. So that was easily one of my top fives.
Well, I'll skip ahead here because one of my top fives is Canada.
Yeah.
And not just that, but I mean, I just love so much of the show has been about Canada. We have so many listeners up there, you know, whether it was me crossing the border with Faso or running a flashing green light in Vancouver, you know, insulting curling fans,
seeing my doppelganger, right? Wasn't that in Canada too?
Yeah. loved having Nuance came on our cruise, brought his wonderful wife, and we've become friends since then too, so that's great. So anytime we've had the 51st American state on the show has been a good time for me, you know.
I'm glad you brought up the flashing lights thing too, because I wanted to mention that, but I didn't have that as one of my top fives. So that was definitely cool, because that was the first time you ever called in.
Oh, that's right.
If I remember
correctly.
So you called in. I'm in the studio by myself, and that was kind of fun. That was a really cool moment for the show. Not a top five, but I'm glad you brought that up.
But I absolutely love the support we got from Canadians. Really, really wanted to find a way to expand our magazine up there, and hopefully we can do that pretty soon. So if any of our Canadian fans who are not still insulted about my love of curling would like to help us, please email us and let us know, and we could use all the help we could. You know, it's also a reminder that we have a real good fan base in Australia and Great Britain, and we'd love to see some of those folks at some point. But you know, I Faso is the one that performs when he comes on the show, but I did write a little ditty here.
Oh, cool.
If you don't mind, out of respect for our great Canadian fans.
Go ahead.
Oh, Canada, these are the only words your anthem I know, but I love you for listening still. Oh, Canada.
Next week we'll have our worst five moments on the show. That will be one of them.
I trust you. You're not going to sing on this show. So
I am not going to sing on this show.
Putting myself out there.
Wow, that was really bad. That was really, really bad. But heartfelt. So we'll give you a pass on that one. You know, when we first got into this industry, I really wasn't sure what to expect when it came to the interviews, like Scott had mentioned. And you know, when you see, I had done interviews with all kinds of sports legends and everything before we did this, because I was in the sporting world for a long time, journalism, and so you can meet some serious egotistical idiots and big heads who don't have any time for you no matter who you are. When we interviewed Barry Greenstein, and I think I mentioned this last week, it was just a reminder of how great people can be and how gracious a lot of these people are, and that they're not these egomaniacs. And I mean, some still are, obviously, when you think about who won the 12th bracelet this week and stuff. But really, he was pulling an all-nighter at the Commerce. He had played straight through all night. It was like 19 hours or something, he told us. I can't remember now, but he told the dealer to deal him out while we interviewed him. He was sitting at the table on his cell phone, and 15 minutes into the interview, our producer chimes in and says, "Sorry, guys, I forgot to press the record button." And the bear was not only so gracious about it. Now, here's a guy that just stopped playing poker, has been up for 20 hours or whatever it was, but then he didn't even miss a beat. He told every single story and answered every single question exactly like he did the first time around. And it, to me, that was a huge moment for me. I just thought, wow, you know, we've picked a pretty good industry to try to make it in. You know, not that at that time we had any, you know, illusions of doing a magazine or doing it for a living, but we just got to experience these people for who they are. And I just, he was so gracious. And then, like, about, I guess it was probably 6 months later or so, at the World Series, I ran into him and thanked him for that interview. And he was just gracious again. He's like, "So how did it go? How was it received? Did everybody really enjoy the interview? Did, you know, I'll do it again?" And I was like, oh my God, he was just the greatest guy. And I've since then, every year that I go to the World Series, I say to him, you know, "Hey, how's it going again? And I don't know if you remember me, but, you know, I'm just glad that you, you know, helped us with our show." And he's just always been so gracious, always talked to me. I even interviewed him once for the magazine. So that was a really cool moment for us, because it could have been a disaster, and instead it turned out to be, at the time, the best interview we've ever done. And I don't know, even now, today, it's hard to surpass it, but that was an awesome moment, I thought, in the show.
It was a really good one. Yeah, I had a pro interview on my list, too, so I'll segue to that since you made me move my list around to get Canada in there. You know, I always have a special place in my heart for Kenna James, who was the first pro we had on the show, and then let us crash at his house and sit in his vibrating chair, which was an amazing thing. You know, but our friend Big Dave helped arrange that for us, which I'm very appreciative of, and Dave's been a great supporter and help for the show over the years. But Andy Block was the first pro that we got on our own, and it wasn't a particularly great interview. In fact, actually, I know some people hated it. But to me, that was a moment where it proved that that it wasn't as hard as I might have thought to get pros to be on the show. You know, I simply just went to his website, sent him an email, asked him to be on the show, and he wrote back almost instantly, "Sure, when? How?"
Yep.
And that, I think, was really cool. And, you know, I'll take a special note, too. And then after that, you know, then we just started, you know, I think you emailed Jennifer Harmon, got her, and then, you know, it was pretty easy at that point. And, you know, you mentioned how cool Barry was. You know, we've been in this business a lot now, and there have been a lot of pros, unfortunately, that I've met that I've been very disappointed with, you know, when I finally met them and how they carried themselves. But so it's even cooler now to think back to the people that aren't like that, like Barry said. Yeah. And Andy's one of those guys, I think, too. You know, I think I was talking about this on Fifth Street Radio last week, you know, right after he won his bracelet, right? And one of the stories that I read was talking about how it was kind of a bittersweet moment for him, because he's still struggling kind of with the full tilt taint.
Yeah.
You know, being involved with a company that that ultimately left all these players high and dry. And, you know, to me, when I read that, I felt for him, because I know that's the kind of guy he is. I mean, I remember back before, you know, before Full Tilt screwed us on the show and everything, he used to play on Full Tilt. You know, you'd go there and there would be the Howard Lederer table or the Jennifer Harmon table, you know, and they have a reserved seat there, and you would almost never see them sitting there. But every time I logged on, Andy Block was playing at like the 2-4 stud 8 table, or the 1-2, or the quarter 50 cent. And I think, you know, it speaks to how much he appreciated the folks like us. And so I'm always going to have a special place for those two guys.
I did play, it was 1-2 horse with him at his table. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. I even interviewed, because I remember that he's from Connecticut, and he's from like the Orange area, Orange Milford area. And, you know, the minute I sat down, I'm like, and this is before we had the magazine or anything, I'm like, "Hey, Andy, you were on our show before." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I remember that, blah, blah, blah." And then I'm like, "How's Connecticut?" And he was another one of those very kind, gracious guys. And even when I went to Fox, it was that first time to cover it, that first time his girlfriend was running, and it was a girlfriend at the time. She was running that Poker Wire or whatever it was, and he would come over and talk to her, and I was there working, and he talked to me, and just a real gracious guy. And like I said, it gets back to the whole Barry Greenstein points that I was making, that there are a lot of gracious people in this business, and he's definitely one of them. You know, I had Kenneth James on my list originally, but I had a feeling one of us might bring that up, so I had a backup just in case. You know, even though we talk about the moments on the show, and this definitely gets to it as well, but editing the 100th show for me was a really, even though it literally took me like a week to edit that show, because it was 3 hours long.
Yeah, 3 hours, 14 minutes.
Yeah, it was a huge show. But then when I compiled those hotlines that somebody mentioned earlier, I guess it was MCMC, it just, every single one of them gave me a chill. And I welled up, and as I was compiling it, and even now, if I listen to it, I will well up, because it, for people to make the effort to call in, and some people made a joke, you know, that they knew would be special to us, or some people, you know, just thanked us heartfelt, and even like someone who called in with the RGC,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah.
You know, random car, RCG, random car generator, robot, and I mean, it's just that whole list, to me, that was easily a top five moment for me, because just, it meant something to them, and it meant something definitely to us, and editing that show was very difficult for me, because it was a long process, and it was emotional, really, to be honest, yeah. And I love that moment, that was easily top five moment for me.
Well, one of mine, obviously, was going to be milestone shows, and the 100 show is part of that. Also, our what I call our independent show, but the pile on the 100th show, you know, you said it well, but you know, if I ever find myself in one of these days where I'm just down and things aren't working out and I'm depressed, there's no way I can't put that show on and not get out of the funk.
Yeah.
You know, because it just reminds me how much our fans love us. You know, I think they tripped in and bought us a trophy then, and
yep.
It makes me remember when, you know, Turley sent us the pizza and things like that. And, you know, I love, you know, we talk about this a lot. We don't make any money off of the show. There are some, you know, loose business reasons that we should still do it. But for the most part, it's a labor of love. For us to do, and the reason it's we love it so much is the interaction with the fans. You know, whether they're emailing us or calling us or they come to the meetups. You know, at the end of the day, you start getting melancholy and thinking about, you know, what you contribute to the world. It's so cool to think that you created something, whatever it is. You know, if it's a work of art or you know, a story in a newspaper, and that's a good reminder that we created something here,
yeah.
And it got bigger because of the people that responded to it. So that's really cool. And then the independent show I mentioned, not because it was a great show, and it actually probably was a pretty terrible show. But you know, I kind of forced you to run the little Independence Day clip with Bill Paxton Pullum, and I know you didn't really want to. So, you know, here on the worst day in Annie Up, if I can get you to do something you don't want to do, it's a day worth living. So remember that. And I believe that was a show that we were huddled under blankets somewhere, wasn't it? And we were recording into the little hand recorder because we left the Time studio. We didn't want to go back and, you know, hey, can we come back and do the show every week? And we hadn't quite worked out the deal with WDAE yet. So we were kind of in this interim little thing. And you know, that's always a good reminder, too. We haven't grown all that big yet. But to think back to when we started this company and, you know, how small it was at the time. And I remember huddling on those blankets doing the show. But, you know, and how we've come from there. It's a pretty cool feeling.
Oh, man. Well, I have to admit that... The next moment for me is actually just a group of moments, and it's always making fun of you for your interviewing skills. And we obviously brought up the Eric Seidel thing, and it's just it's always fun to make fun of each other. And obviously, you know, we have a little self-deprecating humor as well. But yeah, whenever somebody mentions the Eric Seidel interview, I always chuckle, because I'll just never forget how you didn't think that it was impressive to have over 700 people in an event in 2005. I mean, I just thought that was hilarious, and it's iconic now for the show. It really is, and it's one of my favorite moments. Just hearing him just shoot back at you like, oh, I thought it was pretty big, you know. Just classic moment for me.
My last one is kind of a combination too. I started thinking last night when I was just jotting down thoughts about the show, all the places that we've actually recorded the show over the history. So this is not by any means not a complete list, and I'm sure you might be able to add some to them that I forgot, but here's the list I wrote down last night. By the microwave, near the elevator. Then in that really nice Time studio that they built for us, which is awesome. Then at the WDAE studio, I remember we took the little monkeys that our good friend Georgia Pokershar sent us that we gave out.
Yep.
I still have some pictures of that. That was great. Obviously, we're doing it Skype now. We taped the show in one of Chris's spare bedrooms.
Yep.
We taped the one I mentioned in my living room, I think, which we're huddled under blankets. in a ballroom at Caesar's Palace near the piano that we were walking down the hallway, and you're like, oh, look at that grand piano. I used to play. I'm like, yeah, right. You don't play piano. And then I came out of the bathroom, and the most beautiful version of Paco Bell's Canon I've ever heard in my life was coming, and I turned around, and it was your big, ugly face at the keyboard. And then we kept moving from ballroom to ballroom to find a fine, quiet place.
Yep,
that was a great show.
Yep.
In a motel room in Temecula, California.
And you said it right, too.
Yeah, I worked on that one last night. I didn't get to sleep. Taped up several shows on several cruise ships.
Yep.
And then one show in a Mustang driving through the Oklahoma countryside.
That's right, moving car. It's pretty remarkable the lengths that we'll go to keep the streak alive. You know, and that could easily be a moment too. It's just the streak itself. And there are a lot of times where I have to tell you, I'm telling Scott, all right, man, this is the week. This is the week. We don't do it. We don't do the show. And Scott's like, no, we have to do the show. And I'm like, but Scott, we're so behind. We don't have a topic. It's Thursday morning. What are we gonna do? Oh, mailbag! Then we pull a show out of our butt. And it's like, oh, the streak is a living thing now. It really is. I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, Friends not taking a week off? There's no way. They work for 21 weeks or 22 weeks or whatever it is, and then they're off for the rest of the year, and they run reruns. Not us. Every single week. And it's a living thing now, and it's taken on its own sort of personality.
It's a quest. It's a quest for fun.
Well, I think we've done a show like this before where we talked about our favorite moments, and it might have been the 100th show, and it might have been, you know, that cool show we did where I was in one room and you were in the other room. I think you remember that in a studio.
Oh, yeah.
And we kind of did a sort of interview thing where But for me, on one of those shows, I mentioned this as one of my favorite moments, and it always will be probably my favorite moment. And, you know, when you're doing something with somebody and you never really know if it means to them what it means to you, and you're not really sure, are they just placating you because you like to do it? You know, like when I play cards with my family, do they really enjoy playing cards, or do they just think that I love to play poker and they want me to play poker with them? Or, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, do you like to watch a movie with somebody or a TV show? Do they really like this show, or are they just watching it because they know you like it and they care about you or whatever? And when we were doing this moment of our top moments, you had mentioned how much the show meant to you and how when we finally clicked, there was a moment where we clicked and we really hit our stride. And to me, that's always the best moment on the show, was knowing that this meant that much to you. Yeah. And that I wasn't just doing this for myself, or I wasn't just doing this alone and you were just doing it because I happened to ask you one day and now you're stuck doing it because I asked you to do this show with me. That you really not only like doing the show, but embrace it and feel like we were really doing something important. So that when you had that moment on the show, that was my favorite moment of all time on this show. Oh. Just knowing that what we're doing is important to you too. So it's not to be sappy or anything, but really, you don't want to be doing something for 7 years and know the other person doesn't want to be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that to me, yeah, we could have brought up every pro we had on the show and all the interviews we had and all the chuckles and everything, but really, for me, the moment was when you said it was important to you too.
Yeah. And it is. It's awesome. I mean, this is a really cool thing that we've been doing, and, you know, I don't know how long the streak will last. Certainly, I'm going to keep pressuring you to keep it going. I know you're going to pressure me. So, you know, I'd love for us to be doing this when we're 86 at the Green Groves Nursing Home, and maybe those shows could be as bad as our first ones. You know, it's a good bell curve. But who knows? But for right now, I'm going to live in the moment that this is always the highlight of my week.
Well, again, please, you know, thank yourselves for being on our show, because you guys really make it what it is. So, you know, the fact that you appreciate the show only makes it easier for us to keep doing. And, you know, here's to another 7 years.
Absolutely.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gallen.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wasika.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, so, you know, we're having this melancholy historical show today, and we got a hand of the week from someone who says, "Hey, guys, I just found your podcast on iTunes." So Tom Michaud writes it and says, I just started listening to podcasts in general. I really enjoy your show, and I am in the process of catching up on past episodes. So see, if he listens today,
he'll know which ones to go back and listen to.
Not only will he hear his Hand of the Week being analyzed and get some swag, he won't have to go back and listen to the rest because we just told him all the highlights.
He's going to want to listen to show 100, though. He's going to want to listen to show 100.
All right, so here's what Todd wrote in. He's like, he wanted to get our opinion on a hand that happened at a $1,000 buy-in bracelet event at the World Series of Poker. You know, gosh, we've played so many of those that secondhand, so this is going to be an easy one for
everyone.
Min cash is roughly $2,700, and first place is almost $650,000. It's late in day one of the $1,500 event. Did we just add $500 here? There's about 30 minutes left to play in the day. I have about a 5x the average chip stack, but it is a large field over 2,800. I have been the big stack of my table for a few hours when they move a slightly larger stack to my table. Jerks, why do they do that? Guys run over this table and they have to bring somebody in to enforce it, right? He and I tussle over a few pots as I try to establish my dominance at the table, but I end up donating about 25% of my stack to him when he four bets shoves and I lay down top pair. So I'm in a bad mental state when the following hand comes up just a few minutes later.
Hmm.
Wonderful setup, right? You know,
this
can't not go well.
Yeah.
I need to get up and go out and walk out, pay $7 for a bottle of water, come back.
And then not tip the person.
Bad, you're being a different bad mental state at that point, but at least you'll be focused on the poker. All right, so he says, I'm two from the button and look down at the king and queen of hearts. It's folded to us. What do you do, Chris?
I'll raise with it. I'm not going to limp with it. I'm not going to fold it. If it's folded to me and I'm in middle to late position, I'm not going to let it go. So, you know, obviously we've played well at this table. We've got a big stack. If you're five times the average stack, you've got a huge stack. So I'll definitely play it for a raise.
Yeah, these are definitely hands that you need to keep the pressure on. I don't know where our new big stack is, but yeah, you got to keep the pressure on with hands like this. As long as you're smart enough to get away from them when they go bad.
Yeah.
For the most part, you know, keep the pressure on folks. Foot on the throat, as I can say. All right, so our hero raises. It doesn't say how much, but I'm sure it'll, if it matters, we'll come back to it here. The cutoff folds and the button raises. And he says, this is a player that hasn't played a ton of hands and has been stealing some blinds. The blinds fold and it's back to him. It says, the guy has about 80% of my new reduced chip stack size.
Hmm. Okay, so in other words, if we have 100 chips, he has 80, is what he's saying.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure we have more than 100. I'm sure he has.
Yeah, no, I'm just making it easy because I'm a math guy.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so it's weird, Scott. I don't know about you. Sometimes if somebody hasn't been playing a lot of hands and somebody already came in for a raise and then they re-raise, yeah, he could be playing his persona. But really, I'm thinking that I'm in a trap hand now with king-queen, and I might actually let it go. I'm not saying I would let it go. I'm not being that tight. And for the purposes of this hand, I probably would call because I could hit a really good flop and literally double my stack that's already five times the size of the average stack. So I'm going to make a big run if I can do that. But there are instances where I would let this hand go. I mean, it's a trap hand. I'm out of position against somebody who doesn't play a lot of hands, so clearly he likes, not clearly, but he's giving the impression that he likes to play only big hands. So a big hand in this case would be ace-king, could be ace-king, could be kings, could be aces, could be queens, could be ace-queen. All those hands crush us, and are all within his range to do that on this. I mean, when he said before that he was stealing blinds, that's not the case here now. It's not like it folded to him and he's stealing blinds now. There's a razor before him, a couple of sleeves, so he's not stealing blinds here. Now, he could be just thinking that we're not serious and whatever, but if he doesn't play a lot of hands, I generally think that he could have a decent hand here and that at least we know we're behind. And if I'm behind, I'm going to have to hit this flop really hard to get involved. So if I were going to go percentage-wise, I think like 75% of the time I might fold this. I might. But I'll call the raise here and see what happens. I'm not going to re-raise his raise. So Just for the purposes of the hand of the week, you know, I'll probably call. But in the moment, I don't know what I would have done. I may have folded.
Well, I'm not going to fault anybody for folding here. You know, as long as you don't make it a habit, because at that point, then they start brutalizing you.
Right.
So I'll probably call, but I'm calling with a very keen thought process that I'm hoping to hit the slot big, or if the action gets weird after it. But I'm not looking to hit a king or a queen here.
Right.
When I call, in fact, I got my suited cards. I know that doesn't mean much, but you know, maybe I can hit a hard draw or good hearts. Or get a couple cards that might help, like a Jack 10 might be better. I don't necessarily want to see an ace, but if I get a Jack 10, then that's different. But I'm looking for specific flops here or specific action for my opponent, or I'm going to be folding pretty quickly after the call. And it's different. We don't really know the mounts here either, which is, you know.
Remember way back when we said from now on you have to give us every bit of information on the hand, otherwise we can't.
He's new.
He hasn't gotten to that show yet.
All right, so our hero says, I feel his raise is position based more than hand strength based. I put him on a weak ace or a small pocket pair, and I call the raise and see the flop because I have the chips and want to try to hit the flop hard.
Now, okay? That's surprising to me. How does he narrow his range like that? I mean, how can he, one, if it's position-based raise, yeah, okay, he is in position, but you also said that he doesn't play a lot of hands, so why all of a sudden is this a position-based raise? That's something somebody usually does when they play a lot of hands. And then also, how could you put him on a weak ace? How could you even say that? I don't understand that, to be honest. I don't understand how you could say he got a small pair or a weak ace. That's kind of really specific. Just because he re-raised you. To me, somebody re-raises a person who raises and doesn't play a lot of hands, he's certainly got a much stronger ace than that or a better pocket pair than that. It just seems weird that he would narrow that range. Do you see that's odd? Or?
Absolutely. But my take out is I want to try to hit the flop hard. So I think it's an interesting juxtaposition of thoughts here, because if he's got small pair or weak ace, then we don't need to hit that flop hard. If that's
right.
What we put him on.
Right.
But the fact that he's saying, I need to hit the flop hard, I'm kind of dismissing the other stuff, which I agree, I don't necessarily agree with. And as long as he plays this out, if he flops hard, he stays, not that he gets out, then I don't think it really matters whether we put him on a range too soon to put him on a range.
Yeah.
All right, well, the flop comes down, Jack of Hearts, Nine of Hearts, Tray of Clubs, and we are first act.
Brutal. Because, you know, we got a straight flush draw, a straight draw, and two overs. This is going to be ugly, I think. Jeez. You know, normally I would bet here, I think. But since he took the lead, I don't know. I might check raise him. I don't know. It's tough to bet out here knowing that if he has something like queens and now he comes over the top, if I do bet, then what do I do? You know, now do I really want to put 80% of my stack on the line on a draw, regardless of how good that draw is?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it depends on how important this tournament is to me and what I want to do with it. But generally, I bet out, but almost always when I've taken the lead in the hand. Now I don't have the lead anymore. I might check raise here.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're right. I don't want to bet out here and get raised necessarily. So I'm fine just checking, and if I get a free card, great. If he bets at his price, which I'm fine, I think, paying. And then depending on what it is, I might check raise. You know what I like about the check raise here, and I've done this before. It doesn't happen often, but this is one of those sweet spots when it does. You love playing poker. Is if you check raise here and then you hit your card on the flop.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a 10 or the hearts or the 10 of hearts would be amazing. Then I like to check on that turn. It looks like I'm scared of it and I missed it, which would play right into the check raise, wouldn't it, right?
Yeah.
No one's going to expect you to check raise with just a draw here. And then you check and, you know, let him think, oh my God, he's scared, and bet at you, and then boom! Kick him to the curb.
And one of my favorite moments is very similar to that, is when you have pocket nines or something similar and you raise pre-flop, you get a caller, and you make the continuation bet. When you miss completely, they just call, and then you turn your set. And then you check, and they think they're stealing it from you, and then you check raise. That's like my favorite moment in the whole, and it happens very rarely because you guys still have to get a two-outer on the turn for it to happen, but very similar to that. I love that moment.
Yeah, and the fact that I have the chips here, it's more reason I think I might take this shot here. Now, obviously, if you check raise and then they re-raise, then you're in a little bit of a pickle. I'm willing to take the risk that that's not going to happen, and I can be a little frisky here, and then maybe... You know, maybe you can battle it out here even if you miss. I mean, it gets away from what I said at the beginning, but I kind of like the check raise. I think that's what I might do.
Yeah, I think I might do that too, just because of the fact that he's got the lead. And the way I'm thinking in the hand is that he might have a big pair. And if he does, you know, I might get him to lay it down because I might be telling him I flopped a set, you know, or whatever, however I'm playing. And then if I do it my turn card, then it's gin and getting more money out of him. So I like a check raise here.
All right, well, Hero decides to bet out two-thirds of the pot, and his goal is to take it right down. Take it down right here.
Mm-hmm.
Our opponent shoves, which is a huge overbet for the size of the pot.
Oof.
Probably what we were worried about betting out, right?
Yeah, that's what we're
doesn't mean
about.
That he wouldn't have shoved even if we hadn't bet. But
yeah, I don't think he would have, though. There's no reason to just shove on a check like that. You know, you want to get some value. Now that he's gotten some money out of you, maybe he thinks that he can take it down on you're on a draw. I don't know. It's some pretty serious mind reading there for this guy to know that we're on a draw and shove like that. But, well, that's brutal. It's exactly what we didn't want to happen, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so are you asking what I would do?
Yeah, that's the point of the hand word.
Oh, man. Well, I think I mentioned this before. I need to know our hero's situation. Is he a rich guy who can afford a $1,500 buy-in and doesn't really matter to him? Is he a guy who wants to experience it for another few more hours and doesn't want to go out on a draw?
This is what I'll say here, his next line. If I fold, I will still have more than the average stack size, but if I double through, I will have one of the top stacks in the room. The bubble is still a ways away, like several hours into day two. I'm looking for more than a min cash. I want the big bucks. So I'll throw that out in case that helps.
Oh, geez. Well, he obviously is saying that the buy-in doesn't affect him in one way or the other. He doesn't really... It's not like he's going to not be able to pay his mortgage because he screwed around and, you know, didn't make any money in this event. I just don't... Here's the deal. I had this exact same draw almost in the charity tournament, and I would have been the tournament chip leader if I hit my hand.
Yeah.
And I got the guy all in with just top pair, and he and my outs didn't get there. And it didn't happen. And I didn't cry, but I wanted to, you know. And it was only a $175 tournament, you know. And it didn't cripple. I mean, it crippled me, and I was never the same after that. I built it up a little bit, but I didn't want to go out on a draw. But it was such a big draw that I thought I was going to hit something. And when I didn't, it sucked. And now we're talking about a $1,500 tournament for a bracelet, and I still have a huge stack. I don't know if I want to go out on a draw like this. You know, my king might not be good. My queen might not be good. My flush still might not be good. Could be ace-three of hearts. Who knows this guy has? I mean, I was putting him on a bigger hand than that. So
he could have a set easily here, too, and we could catch up on the turn and then lose on the river.
Exactly. Or we could just lose in a turn altogether and be drawn dead.
That's true, too.
Oh, yeah. Other than the 10 of hearts, I guess. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm making that call. And it's not... For me, it's not the money, the buy-in, because I bought into a $1,500 event there, and I was a working man. I'm not somebody who can afford to do that, and I played the way I needed to play to last 10 hours. I made moves that I wouldn't have normally made, you know, but I don't know, Scott. I think if I'm in his position and he really wants to not have a min cash, he's looking for some big money. Maybe I call, because I still have money left. I still have 20% of my stack. I don't know how much that means relative to the blinds here. That's the hard part.
Exactly.
But if I'm him, I might be calling just because of how big this draw is. If it's me, again, I really would like to know the numbers here. But I probably would fold this hand. The other thing, too, is I might have folded to a re-raise anyway pre-flop and not even been in this position. So it's hard for me to react to these positions when I'm not putting myself in them. But it's such a big draw. Any 10, king and queen could be good. You might have to make those like 1.5 outs instead of 3 outs, you know, when you're configuring things or whatever. But, God, any heart, probably. But that's the thing, is it could be ace 3 of hearts, and then you're drawing dead there, and you have to hit a king or a queen or a 10. So I'm going to fold.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about this hand is I didn't think about this when I picked it for this week, but an interesting thread is brewing on the forum talking about tournament survival. Uh-huh. And how some folks struggle with it a little bit. And I totally agree. I think people lose sight of the fact that once you're out of a tournament, you can't win the tournament. That doesn't mean you play super conservative, but there has to be an acknowledgement in tournament poker that no matter how rich you are, when you don't have any more chips on the table, you're out. Whereas in a cash game, you go all in, you're out, you go sell South Fork Ranch and come back and play, you know?
Right.
And this is the kind of thinking, and I'm not criticizing Todd here, but this is the kind of thinking I see a lot from folks, and I post about this, is, I don't want to min cash. I want to win the big money, which is an absolute great frame of mind to be in. But that doesn't mean you just get your chips in crazy saying, oh, hey, at least I'm not going for the min cash. I'm looking for the win.
Right.
You know, you look for the best opportunities. And I don't know whether this is a good opportunity for me right now.
Right.
You know, you're right. It's a big draw. There's lots of things that could go right for us. But we have two cards to come, and we could miss, or we could even catch and then lose. And right now we have king high, right?
King high. Right.
So, and we're talking about a guy that doesn't play a lot of pots, right? This just doesn't, to me, qualify as a hand where I need to be going for the big bucks and not worry about a min cash.
Well, here's the deal. If you're up against a set right now, you're a dog, 2 to 1. It's 34% that you're going to make your hand and win it. If you're up against a set of jacks or a set of nines or a set of threes. So you're basically way behind. I mean, I know a heart will win for you, but you're only going to win one out of every three hands. So that's two times you're not going to win. And it's such a big tournament, and you have such a big stack right now. Yeah, okay, you raised, called re-raised, and then bet out and lost. But still, you still have at least four times the average stack. Right. You don't need to have eight times the average stack to make a good run. You've got the run, and even so, the king and the queen might not be good. You know, it's tough. It's really, really tough. I guess if he was up against something like pocket aces, it'd be a coin flip, but he'd still be behind.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
it'd be like 53-47 behind. So the king and the queen don't help.
It's really hard to imagine that we're a favored or even a close favorite here.
Yeah. Yep. Right. I guess the only hand that he could be, you know, a favorite against would be something like ace jack. You know, where a guy has ace jack, raised with ace jack, which is reasonable. Yeah. Raising with ace jack, at that point you're about a 60-40 favorite on the flop. But you know, on the turn, if something ragged comes, like a rag six or seven or something, well then you're back to a little worse than a coin flip. Now it flops itself. Now you're a dog 60-40. So I don't know. I just feel like you could. It's a good spot. Believe me, it's a good spot. And if
it
was later in the tournament or something and you need to double up, that's something you're doing
it with.
But
it's very early. There's lots of reasons. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm letting it go.
I'm letting it go, too.
But now I got to hear the post-mortem.
All right, so
he sent it in. So
I have a strong feeling this guy is either holding something like an ace-nine, ace-tray, or small pocket pair. The way he made a shove just led me to believe he was thin. The overbet makes me figure he either has a monster, a set of trays or a set of nines, or not much, and my gut tells me that it is not much. He could have a flush draw, but it just doesn't feel like he would risk his whole stack to me when a pot-sized bet would accomplish the same thing. I felt he might be trying to make a move because he thought I was on tilt for my big laydown before.
Well, here's the deal. And, you know, I'm not saying that ace-nine or ace-tray isn't a possibility. The problem with ace-tray is that it could be the hearts. And so now you're in a position where you have to hit the king or the queen to win, which is only six outs. And even then, you have to still dodge the hearts after that.
Yeah, you know, here's my thing about his thinking there is he's thin. All right, I hear this a lot, too. This is the other thing that drives me crazy. Oh, I know he's thin, but how thick are we here?
Yeah.
It's thin versus thin.
Yeah, so, king, queen's all you got.
Sometimes in poker, your opponent gets the best of you, and you know it, and what you need to do is just find a way to turn the other cheek and come back strong the next hand. You know, good poker players make good moves, and sometimes you get caught in that, and you just have to, like, tap the table and say, hey, that was a good move, and actually mean it, you know?
Here's the thing, too, is let's say it is ace-nine or ace-tray, and it's not hearts, it's just ace-nine or ace-tray, so he has a pair. At that point, he's still... It's funny because he's 50-50, essentially. And then he's saying, if it's a set of threes or a set of nines, or it's nothing. So he's telling himself it's 50-50. Yeah. So it's a coin flip either way. I just don't know if I want to put my entire tournament life, and where I'm doing very well, by the way.
Absolutely.
And I've exposed this table except for this one guy, and I've got hours. That's the thing about why I think I did so decent in my foray into the World Series that time, was the blind levels were so awesome. You could pick and choose your moments and play the game you want to play if you're, you know, and even if you want to play a different game, you have plenty of time to do that too. Why put it all in on one hand when you're in such a good position right now? Just, I feel like to let it go is more important than, yeah, I know he wants to make this big stack and wants to make this big run, but he has a big stack. He could do this again later and just build it, keep building it. It's a marathon. It's not
patience
a sprint. Yeah. I feel like he should let it go.
All right. So he tanks for 5 minutes and makes the call. He says he was really driven by the desire to take risk in order to be a big stack versus going into day two with an average stack. But he also started to look more uncomfortable the longer that I thought about it. My read was correct, and he had ace nine of diamonds. I have 19 outs, 9 hearts, 3 kings, 3 queens, and 4 tens. Blank, blank, and I'm left with 2 big blinds, which go away 2 hands later.
Wow. Well, again, saying that he looked uncomfortable, we were still behind.
Yeah.
And we were still behind the reins that you were putting on.
Well, it gets back to that. Yeah, what I was saying is, you know, he was thin, but we just don't have a hand that we can call his thinness with.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, just because we don't get any points for having the right read.
Right.
You know,
right.
We have points for winning hands.
Yep.
And winning pots and winning chips, you know. And
so it essentially was a coin flip, a little more. We were a little bit of a favorite at that flop. We really were.
19 outs, I would think so. Yeah.
But once the turn came, we weren't.
Yeah.
So then it was less than a coin flip for us. So brutal. I don't know. And I did make that mistake in my tournament that we talked about a little while ago. I made that mistake of thinking, oh my god, I can't miss this draw. I have a top pair, and then mine was even stronger than his, because I had the pair as well.
Yeah.
And it didn't get there. So it was just absolutely brutal. Yeah, tough. Tough to go out of the world. We didn't go out on that, but they always say the second to last hand is the one that crushes you. And that really
did. Said this is a hand that he played 3 years ago. He's still not over it. He says he's of all the hands I've played over the past 10 years, this is the hand that haunts me the most.
Yeah, yeah.
If I had gone to day two with an average chip stack, I might have found a better place to put my money in. And, you know, when we get back to the tournament survival thing, you know, I hope that discussion continues on the forum, because that's the point I always make, is that, yes, it's actually a very sound strategy to want to go for the big money and not just min cash, but that doesn't minimize the fact that you can do both. You can shoot, you can make very good decisions that get you closer to the min cash, and then be more aggressive when you get to that point. You don't necessarily have to push every single edge you have at every single point and then say, oh, well, hey, it didn't work out, I was just going for the big money. I think you're giving up value by doing that consistently.
That's a good point. And again, you know, he talked about going into day two as an average stack. Well, you wouldn't have been average. You were still, if you were 5 times the average stack and only lost one bet here and calling a re-raise and then losing 2/3 of the pot, you're still bigger than average. And if you played the way you were playing, there was no reason to believe that it was going to get harder on you at that table.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, I mean, yeah, in the next hand, you could wake up a pocket aces and flop quads.
Yep.
And that's I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably a better situation than what we have here, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously the weakness is waiting too long for those opportunities and blinding down, but we are nowhere in that situation right now. And, you know, an average chip stack is rarely a bad thing.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it gives an average chip stack, you know, gives you some options. So take those options, get a situation where you're much better than you are here, and you have a better shot of getting the big bucks, even if you end up min-cashing.
Here's something to think about. If you're always the average stack, you'll make the final table.
That's true.
You can't not make the final table if you always have an average stack size. Yeah. So at some point, you're going to be the average stack at the final table. So there's really nothing wrong with that. But again, he wouldn't have been the average stack. He still would have been pretty big. So yeah, I can see why it's so tough for him to think about, because even I'm still thinking about that. Yeah, I wouldn't even go. Who knows what would have happened if I was chip leader in that tournament, you know? But you just got to let it go. You got to let it go and feel happy that we're going to give you some swag. $1,500 swag here.
Yeah, it will not be worth $1,500, but it's not a bad prize nonetheless. We're going to give you a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. Everybody else can pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com and send us your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
All right, again, thanks to everybody who sent in all their responses and feelings about the show. Really appreciate it. And a great 7 years, buddy. Way to go.
Absolutely. Looking forward to 17 more.
I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.